as we attempt to stop ourselves from going batshit crazy over the planet-wide sit-in, a lot, and I mean a lot of fans, have turned to e-racing to quell the hunger. In motorsport fandom, e-racing has taken over the world. Interest in new fans also competing online has obviously grown, and today we talk a little bit about sim racing rigs, from starting your own setup to what is realistic at the competitive end, which is not always the top end. Even if you're not bolting a steering wheel to your coffee table, viewing esports has never been easier, from TV and cable networks or streaming online. But the one service that seems to be getting a lot of talk lately is Twitch. Twitch is primarily a platform that lets you stream, view, and even chat to your racing heroes live as the races are happening. But it's so much more, and online, it has taken its place as an essential item in the motorsport viewer's toolbox. Welcome to eRacing X, a podcast dedicated to bringing you some news, information, and an insight into what the virtual racing world is all about. Welcome to eRacing X, everybody. And on the line, I've got Andrew Clark. How you going, Clarky?
Hey, Big Hair. I'm doing pretty well for a Monday night down here in Aussie. It's getting cold, though.
Oh, another part of our tri group, or there must be a better word for that, is Nathan. How are you going, Nathan?
Pretty good, guys. Yes. Just shacked up here in Melbourne as well, in my little isolation room.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. A bit of a general roundup. Clarky, you'll tend to be the guy that what's going on. What's the latest? What's the championships? I know you watch the supercars, the IndyCars. Nathan, you're watching supercars, IndyCars, and a couple of other things. Obviously, what you're doing in the Aussie Mixed and Fixed. Give me a bit of a rundown.
Let's crack on with the IndyCars, because that's the one that fascinates me, especially given this weekend is the last weekend of their little championship. So, interesting round. Lando Norris jumped in from Formula One land, and he dominated. Even spun and still won. So he walked away in the McLaren. It's probably hopeful that McLaren think they could do the same thing with that. Doesn't quite work that way, Lando and McLaren. But, yeah, so good win to him. Probably the Coda track, the Circuit of the Americas, which is a beautiful track. For some reason, it's nice to drive, but you just don't get lots of cracking racing on it. So I think that was reflected in the IndyCars as well a little bit. But interesting, much more important for me is where the championship is at. IndyCars is not running an official championship, so I've got to get out a calculator and my abacus. And I've got Simon Pagenaud on 176, I've got Will Power on 176, and I've got Scott McLaughlin on 161.
Oh.
They're the only three in contention at the moment. So if we take the IndyCar point score, you get 50 points for a win, 40 points for second, 35 for third, and so on down. But you also get a point for leading any lap, for getting pole position, and you get 2 points for leading the most laps. So between those three, this championship is very much alive. But then the big twist, because if it was real world, the Indy 500, because we're running at Indianapolis next weekend, but we're not doing the 500, you get 9 points for pole at the Indy 500. So we may be...
How many laps are they running?
Oh, not many.
No. Well, that's pretty decisive. Nathan, you watched the IndyCar race, just sticking on the IndyCar for the moment. You looked at it a bit differently, didn't you?
It was a great race to watch. And as expected, Lando, who was a seasoned sim racing professional, creamed the field. He was about half a second quicker than anyone else, which was good. But no, I sat down and I had one screen on the right-hand side watching Scott McLaughlin's in-car from his live Twitch stream. And on the left screen, I had the race broadcast so I could watch and listen to both at the same time to try and keep up with what was going on. But thank God for Twitch and live streaming. It's fantastic to watch all these drivers do their stuff and listen to their engineers. I think it's fascinating.
Is there much banter between Scott and his spotter or whatever they call it?
Once the helmet's on, it's race time. So there's not a lot of banter as they're going around. They're doing the business, but still fascinating to listen to.
I think it's funny how serious they are, you know, because there was always the concept that it was going to be a bit of a joke. And I think you watch the first round of the supercars, for instance, and, you know, Dave Reynolds and, you know, Rick Kelly thought it was all a bit of a hoot. But then you see Rick Kelly starting to get serious. Each week he's more serious.
The better equipment he got, the more serious he got.
That's right. And you look at the faces of, you know, of Scott McLaughlin when he got pushed off the track the other day, and I was like, you know, like a little thunderclap Newman coming. So it was interesting, I think, that, you know, it's becoming their racing norm at the moment. I mean, obviously we're all stuck inside the four walls of our homes or whatever. But, you know, they are getting pretty bloody serious about this thing.
Oh, competitive people trying to win, that's for sure.
Well, sticking to V8 supercars now, there was the race on Wednesday at Bathurst. Everybody, obviously, they were going to have a Bathurst in one of their rounds. Otherwise, it would have been a riot from everybody. But the talking point is Brody Konstecki and obviously Scott McLaughlin. Scott got the penalty in one of the races for hitting Will Power. Right? I don't know what you guys thought of that. Do you think that was Scott's fault, or do you think Will moved over on him when Scott had his nose, when they were kind of together? And what do you think? You're going to have an opinion on that one?
I think it was mostly the fact that Will Power was driving a grey car and you couldn't quite see it because it was this matte grey thing. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe those, well, what do they call it, a ping or a... you know,
net code.
That's the word. Yeah, rely on the sim racer to give us the answer there. I think this is the one thing that I'm finding a little bit interesting is that it's not an exact science like cars. Like a car, you know exactly where the bonnet is and where it finishes. In this thing, you know, theoretically that's the case, but we do have these lags that happen because of where we might be sitting and where somebody else is sitting. So I think, you know, Craig Baird is trying to be a policeman, but even he understands that it's not a totally exact science. And
okay, the second incident where Brody got in the back of Scott, pushed him out a little wide and took the win the last turn, which is that was one of the best laps. Those two guys going on that last lap, and you're thinking, is Brody going to get past him or not? And I'll tell you, it was like watching it for real. What I felt that Scott went in that corner hard, too hard, and his back wheels were already locked up, and Brody just took advantage. Well, that was my opinion anyway. I don't know if you guys have got a different opinion.
Well, I think Scott was absolutely on the limit trying to stay in front of Brody, and Brody went deep as well and gave him a bit of a nudge. But I think the main thing you highlighted there, Nev, was that it was fantastic racing. You know, for anyone who was watching that, it was like watching the real thing. These were three professional drivers at the end of that race driving professionally, and that's a really hard thing to do at Bathurst for anyone, let alone in a sim.
Yeah, and when you're watching, you know, McLaughlin taking a defensive line and, you know, Brody sticking his nose out and looking around, you know, it does remind me of a bunch of those races we've seen near the end, like particularly that big Mostyn versus Wincup one a few years ago when Wincup was trying to save fuel, for instance. You know, it was good. It was great to watch. And when it's like that, I think it's, you know, it fills any gap that real motorsport might be leaving you.
And I think that last race was a really good showing of the supercar drivers in iRacing doing a good job. Like, it's a hard car to drive around that track. Speaking from experience, it's a hard car to drive. And there were plenty of battles, you know, in that last race, watching these guys go nose to tail down the mountain, you know, in a pack of four, not taking each other out, was just fantastic to watch.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting to hear Brody Konstecki say afterwards, you know, that it was just a typical NASCAR bump and run, you know, and he thought he shouldn't have been penalised for it.
So, I don't reckon he should have either. I reckon he should have.
He acknowledges he deliberately put him out, deliberately did it. But yep. I can kind of understand both ways to look at it in that sense. You know, maybe he'll tell us a little bit what was going on in his scon later when we talk to him. But it's just one of those things.
And I thought it was also good that Craig Baird, as the driving standard observer, didn't dish out a strict penalty for it. You had a bit of a laugh with the guys and say, look, we'll just swap positions. And I think it was a great lighthearted ending to the race. Both drivers knew what they were doing and what was going on, and it was a good finish.
So, guys, moving on, did you watch any NASCAR? I was still trying to figure out which ones I need to be watching because there's three of them. I think there's maybe one on now, the Pro Invitational. I can never figure out when they're on.
Yeah, they beat the hell out of me.
I want to see the Pro Invitational.
Pro Invitational.
Not so much about Sunday Night Thunder. Talladega's a great track, but I'm still trying to figure out when and where it is.
It'd be nice if we got a bit more clarity around that. So maybe we should get a NASCAR person on the line to explain.
Maybe that's something we can do online to clarify a bit of that calendar or whatever. So we'll get to that. Okay, Nathan, you did a bit of that on the Aussie Mixed and Fix. And I heard it looks like you're still leading the championship, but you almost weren't leading the championship. You want to fill us in on what happened there?
Oh, Sunday night in the Aussie Mixed and Fix series was a tough one for me.
It was at Silverstone, wasn't it?
It was at Silverstone, yeah, that was right. 45-minute race, but, my teammate Craig Edwards of Fusion Sim Racing did a great job, led from start to finish. So he was on fire. I think I started 11th, spun myself on the first lap and dropped back to 40th and had to pit early and somehow made it back to 11th. So saved a little bit of face.
I'll let you in on a secret. Hang on a sec. Spinning's never a good thing.
No. I didn't realise that.
Digital or real life, yeah.
That was just my input that I was going to do when grandma decided to try and teach me new grammar. Anyway,
see, Nathan, how many of you competing in the Fusion Sim Racing team at the Aussie Mix and Fixed?
I think in the Fusion Sim Racing team, we've probably got 7 or 8 drivers in that series who compete fairly regularly. So it's a pretty decent field of cars for us.
So all of you are running it. Did you all of you run Silverstone or just a certain amount of you whenever you can?
Oh, look, there's a core group of us who run pretty much every race we can and a few guys who pop in and out depending on whether they like the track or not. It turns out some people don't like the new Silverstone layout as much as the old one. But neither do I after Sunday night.
Well,
you can't blame the track.
It was all me.
Is there a teams championship or is that stuff not happening yet?
No, there's no teams championship in this one. It's just there's an outright championship and there's 4 different classes. So championship within.
So there is opportunity to have teams championships in iRacing?
There is, yeah. You can have team cars in iRacing. So for longer endurance events, you can have 2 or 3, 4, 5 people in a team and switch around in pit stops and things. And, yeah, it's a great aspect of the game, actually.
Well, I'll move on, but I'd like to get into teams in another episode and talk more about how they're all set up because there's a lot going on there. You talked about sponsorship and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's a good reason to start a team, sponsorship, prize money, all that. But I want to get into our first subject, and that is setup. And I'm talking about the types of equipment. Nathan, you've been doing it nearly, 5 years now, maybe even longer. Clarkie, you're just starting. So. Yep.
Just broke my virginity.
Nathan, I'd like to ask you first, could you give us a bit of a rundown of your setup now?
So my setup now is a Pagnion GT Ultimate simulator rig, which has a chair and the frame and so on. I've got triple monitors, so 3 screens that I use for racing, plus a 4th monitor for data display and strategy. I have a Thrustmaster T500 wheel, Ferrari Formula rim, and Thrustmaster pedals, and a few other little ancillary bits here and there.
What did you start out on?
I pretty much started out just with a Logitech wheel and pedals, so very similar to the ones that Andrew's got that are sitting somewhere in a Port Melbourne, Australia post
in a mail
center.
I'm finding very hard to adjust to at the moment.
Yeah. So started out with a basic wheel and pedals, literally clamped to a desk with 1 screen and a computer that could run the game well enough. You know, the frame rate has to be decent enough that the picture is smooth, and just started there, started pretty cheap.
How long did you stick with that before you started upgrading?
I was probably using that for at least a couple of years. So I started with a simulator called R-Factor, which is a great simulation tool. And there are professional versions of R-Factor that racing teams use and they build their own simulators with. So that's great. That was a good tool. But then I discovered iRacing and I loved that community aspect of it where you could race with your friends in teams, things like that. And that's when I really started to get, I guess, a bit more involved and wanted to upgrade the computer, find a sim rig that I could sit in rather than an office chair or a kitchen chair or something. And especially if you're spending a long time doing it, you want to be as comfortable as possible and you want the experience to be as good as possible as well.
Clarkie, we just talked about how your gear is still sitting in the postal centre.
I know, it's awful.
I know you've already registered, logged on, whatever. Have you been racing at all? What have you been doing?
I haven't been racing yet. I've just been practicing because all I can use is my mouse.
That sounds like fun.
I know the great thing is that it does give you the ability to modulate the throttle and the brake, which is interesting. And you get to steer and accelerate and do all those sort of things, which is okay. I mean, but I keep clicking the mouse, and every time I click the mouse, I lose control of the car and hit the wall. But I'm getting there, and I've done a few things. I'm still at the lowest level of everything, and my little I started out with the Dallara, and that was a bit quick on the at Limestone. So then I switched to the Pontiac Solstice at Laguna Seca.
Oh, the good old Slowstice. That's right.
No, it suits me. It gives me enough time to react.
It's a great car to start with. It is. It is. And I'm looking forward to getting onto the track with you, Andrew. But not while you're using a mouse. I've just been steering clear for the moment.
Yeah, I would avoid it at the moment too, because I could tell you, I think I can actually hurt you in a simulation sense. But I'm quite keen to have a crack at the little Mazda MX-5 Cup series eventually, so I think I'll set that as my first task. Yep. I'm an old Mazda MX-5 owner, so it'll make me feel like I'm going back a few days.
That's the best way to get started and start building your license up and your safety rating, which we can talk about later. Yeah.
We'll get into the licensing setup and even how the whole iRacing works in probably another episode sooner than later. But I wanted to ask, we know Andrew's waiting for his first steering wheel and pedals, right? So we know what's coming for him. Nathan, what would you do now to improve your rig? Have you got any future plans for it, or this is it?
No, we've always got a few plans for it. I think the basic setup is actually not too bad. The steering wheel is pretty good. And I think what most people will find as they get a bit more experience with sim racing is that the wheel doesn't have to be the best thing in the world. Having a better wheel, which might cost thousands of dollars, will give you some more feel and a bit more immersion. May not give you much more lap time, but the one thing I would like to improve and I think would help with lap time a bit is getting some better pedals. So pedals with better brake pressure and brake feel in particular, that would be my next upgrade for sure.
So I've got a mate who used to make proper pedal boxes for racing cars. I'm going to go to...
We've got a few mates, haven't we?
Well, yeah, but this guy's got no job at the moment because... he was running a place called Taskworks, which was an engineering centre for kids. So he got nothing to do. So I figured he could start building some pedal boxes for sim racing. So I'll just go and I'm going to have a chat to him and see what he reckons.
Nathan, could you put a price on kind of how much you spent so far?
Not when his wife's around.
No, well, you've got to make sure she's not listening. On the hardware, I'd say it's probably around $3,000 for the sim rig and the wheel and pedals, something like that. The computers on top of that, some people go a bit crazy, but I guess to replace mine might be another couple of grand, something like that, for a fairly decent sort of gaming computer. And then you've got the software side of things. So iRacing is a subscription service.
Cheap at the moment.
If I can get that out. yeah, it's cheap to sign up if you're a new driver. It's like 50% off. I think it's about $100 a year.
That's okay.
That's not too bad. When you consider the number of hours that a lot of people put into it, and if I added up the hourly cost for me, it's quite cheap entertainment. So, but I definitely spend many hundreds of dollars a year on content, but I spend quite a bit of time on the sim.
Andrew, how much do you reckon you spent in the startup?
Whatever the iRacing cost me.
Wheel and the pedals, what were they cost?
They're $4.99.
Okay, cool. Well, that's it. So for $500, you can pretty much get it started decent.
Yeah, and that's what I'm, like all reports, I mean, we heard from Dan last week about it all, that we can go and do it and we can do it well from there. And apparently a lot of the guys who've got the really big rigs and setups and things are still using the Logitech steering wheel, but they've got a different pedal box.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that seems to be a way to go in the future. And who knows, maybe Logitech will upgrade their pedals at some stage because everybody's always trying to get better.
And you don't need VR and you don't need triple screens. I mean, Scott McLaughlin still runs a single screen, so you can see how far someone like Scott can get in sim racing and how good he is. So
you don't want to use mirror,
Don't need to. I'm going to move this on, guys, because we're running out of time. And I want to talk about, we saw over the past couple of weeks, drivers losing sponsors, losing drives, losing teams, stuff that they've said online, rage quitting, the whole lot. And that's one thing that this whole online community has taught me. Everybody can hear what you're saying. So there's obviously a lot of ways to view online racing. I've only watched it on, I'm watching Supercars on 10play, and I'm watching it on YouTube replays or YouTube Live. But that's only scratching the surface. I mean, you guys talk about Twitch. Well, how many different ways can you watch this racing?
Well, it's quite a few apart from the TV. I mean, obviously YouTube is a pretty big platform, and you can stream live on YouTube as well as watch recorded races. I mentioned Twitch before. That's a streaming service.
Tell me about Twitch. How's that work?
Well, you basically create a free Twitch account, and as you sit there driving, you can stream what you see, all of your audio, live to the internet, and anyone can watch it. They can chat with you and comment about it in text chat. It's quite a mature platform, and a lot of the games like Counter-Strike and League of Legends can have serious numbers of viewers of popular Twitch streamers. And what we're seeing with sim racing is guys like, you know, Lando Norris, Scott McLaughlin now, Brody Kostecki's been doing a lot of streaming, and we're about to chat to him. It's getting very, very popular. And, of course, that opens you up to, I guess, some risk if you say or do the wrong thing in front of thousands of people who are watching.
But the upside to that is that while there's a little bit of a risk, there's also a great opportunity. So I think if you're able to build a profile, you're going to get a lot of viewers. You're going to get a lot of people looking. And with any sort of luck, that means a lot of money flowing through to your pocket.
And it's a totally different way of engaging with an audience. You know, like now we can watch these real supercar drivers sitting in their lounge room or their man cave racing and talking with each other and listen to their strategy and what they say during a race. I think it just adds a whole nother dimension to racing.
Yeah, and it's fascinating for me because, I'm an old school journo, and I've spent my life travelling car racing tracks, and I always used to have a radio and listening into the conversations between drivers and their engineers and things. So Twitch is really that, but online. You know, it's allowing me to find out what's going on, what setup, you know, although we're not changing setups so much at the moment, but, you know, you're getting to learn those parts of things. But the other thing I've enjoyed with it is that you're hearing the banter between the drivers. So you're actually getting more of an insight into their personality, you know, especially those guys on the IndyCar ones where they're really quite talkative. I'm enjoying that stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing funnier than listening to Will Power call someone a wanker in IndyCar.
I hear some drivers not showing their setups and the stuff on the steering wheel on the computer in iRacing, so because other teams can tune in their Twitch stream and see what they're doing. Now, is Twitch... because I'm the uninitiated. Twitch is obviously through your web browser.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's just so, logging into YouTube and watching YouTube. Okay. And you're logging into Twitch.
No worries. Is it just you tune into individual people? So you know how I watch the IndyCar race and I can see the whole race in the telecast. This one's individual people and you follow them around in their car, correct?
Yeah, I like Nathan's method. I'm thinking of doing that if I could get up at the right time of day. You know, I'll have a Twitch on one screen and I'll have the race on the other.
Are you watching what the driver sees, or can you watch different views of their car?
It's whatever they choose. So normally you'd be looking at what they see on their screen. So they're taking their screen that they're looking at and they're broadcasting that along with some overlays.
Yeah,
so some of these guys actually have quite a nice little production going on with overlays and timing and track maps and, you know, all the stuff that you want to see.
You know, it's watching how that evolves, I think, is going to be another interesting thing, because like what's happened now is that we've got superstars, absolute superstars of the motorsport world are now doing sim racing because they can't do real racing. So, you know, all of the tensions going, you know, I mean, Sebastian Vettel's just bought a rig and he's about to start as well. So, you know, all you need now is Lewis Hamilton to jump on, and you can imagine every motorsport fan in the world is going to be starting to watch these things because we can't watch normal stuff. So what we're seeing is the personalities and the adaptability of these guys is coming through. And, you know, I think it's, to me, like I love the personalities, and I think this is what we're going to get out of this.
Absolutely. And Joe Blow, sitting in his lounge room chair, can type a message and say, you know, good luck, Scott Pye, good luck, whoever, hope you do well, and he'll get a response, you know. And Scott Pye has been racing And then after his race finishes, he'll sit there and answer questions with fans. Like this, yeah. You've just never been able to do this before. It's been great.
What's really grabbed me so far is there's a certain level of reality to it that is captivating. But then the second part is that, you know, we really do get inside their drivers' helmets and we can sit there with them and find out what's going on.
Well, guys, I'm going to wrap it up here because time's getting away from us. But I just first wanted to highlight, Nathan, you're racing next week at Mid-Ohio.
That's right.
8:30 Melbourne, Australia time. Yep. How can we see that?
You can search for Apex Racing TV. So they stream on Twitch and YouTube, and you can follow the Fusion Sim Racing team at Mid-Ohio.
This is the Aussie Mixed and Fixed, right?
Aussie Mixed and Fixed GT Series, that's right.
We'll put a link to it on the eracingx.com website just to make it...
Sounds like a bloody awesome idea. Okay,
and I'm just warming up my Mazda Nev. I'm getting ready to go out.
Well, you're going to use it with a you're going to race it with your mouth. Good stuff. I can't believe I'm hearing this. Okay, gentlemen, it's good to have you, and we'll catch up next week.
And now we interview Brody Kostecki.
And on the line we've got Brody Kostecki. Welcome, Brody.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Brody, we've got you on because, first of all, we've been watching you do pretty well in NASCAR online and all racing. Plus, got involved with, you were involved with the supercars in helping them set up. So we're probably going to pick your brains on a bit of all that. But first of all, can you give us a rundown of your racing career because you've done racing and online?
Yeah. So I first started racing at a pretty sort of young age. Got given a go-kart for my fourth birthday. And my parents and, you know, my great-grandparents have also been involved in racing. So it was sort of, you know, it was in my blood. And grew a passion for it straight away and sort of continued through that. And, you know, started in go-karts. I stopped racing go-karts at the age of sort of 11, 12. And I decided to, you know, with my family, moved to the States and have a crack at cars. So, you know, I moved over there and raced USAC midgets and was quite successful over there and moved into, you know, the NASCAR ranks as soon as I could, which was at the age of 13 and a half. And
so some people that just start their racing careers and you're already getting into NASCAR at 13 and a half. What's going on?
Yeah, it's that, like, that was the whole reason why, is to just, you know, try to fast track my experience as much as possible. And, you know, whether or not I did go to NASCAR or not, or if I did come back to Australia, you know, the sort of strategy behind that was that if I did come back, I had, you know, so many years racing under my belt already, in a car, which is, you know, like, this is what this game's about. It's about experience. So, you know, obviously you have to have sort of, you know, some sort of talent, as well. So, but, you know, we just try to connect the dots as much as possible. And, you know, so far it's been working out, and I'm standing here today talking to you guys.
I'm a bit disappointed you don't have this big American drawling accent, you know? And then Brody.
I can put it on, but I'm not going to.
Oh, come on.
Where were you living in the States?
I was living in Sacramento, California when I first moved over there. So I lived there for a year when I was doing USAC midgets and stuff, because they were quite large on the West Coast. And then obviously going south and also on the East Coast, I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. So,
great stuff. I know you did a lot of experience in the US in real racing and started to do some NASCAR stuff, but I guess what we're keen to know is, when did you first really get involved in online racing? And when you first did get involved with it, was it more of a bit of a way to muck around, or did you start to treat it as a more serious tool? How did you get into it?
I started racing online on a console, so Xbox. First started, yeah. The V8 supercar games, and then, you know, I got pretty sick of those and did a bit of research and saw that, you know, there's a game called R Factor. So I jumped on there and raced on there a bit, like on supercars and sort of dirt midgets on oval, speedway stuff. You know, there's quite a big community based, you know, sort of modding and stuff like that. So did that for a while. Then I discovered iRacing in late 2010, jumped on there and, you know, raced on there for a few years and got pretty good at it. And sort of, I just did it to sort of, you know, sort of to fill the void as much as possible, you know, while I wasn't racing, because that's, you know, what I'm mostly passionate about and, you know, what I wanted to do with my career. So I just sort of used it as a tool to try and you know, try to boost my knowledge and also to just have some fun.
And how did you find the transition from real world to the sim? Was it tough? Was it, did it feel right, or did you have to adjust a whole bunch of thinking in your head?
When I first jumped across onto sim racing, was quite a bit. It's a lot different back then to what it is today. So it was nothing like real racing at all. Well, the racing was, but you know, how you drive the cars and stuff was very game, arcadey type feeling. But how it's gotten today is sort of quite impressive to how it was back then. So I just jumped on there because it was, you know, what, for one, it was competitive because you had other competitive people on there that had a passion for racing. And two, you know, you could learn new tracks without going to them. So even though the, you know, the technology wasn't as good back then, you could still learn new tracks. So that's sort of, you know, what I mostly used it for.
I noticed that you've got quite a high rating in oval racing. So you've obviously done a lot of that on the platform. That's not something that I've done much of because I enjoy the road racing side myself, but you've done a bit of both. And I'd love to know your opinion of, as far as the tracks, we know that they're all laser scanned in iRacing and other platforms as well, but the car physics seem to have come quite a long way. Do you think that some of the road racing cars are a bit more accurate as far as handling or oval or dirt? Have you got an opinion?
Yeah, I think that the dirt racing is actually pretty good to, you know, like what I felt in a real life car. The road racing stuff, you know, the car physics really jumps every season. So iRacing has, you know, four seasons throughout the year. They break it down into quarters. And each quarter they'll put an update out and they'll work on a, like on a new tire model or something, try to replicate, you know, real life as much as possible. And sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. But, you know, it's all part of development is, you know, it's not always a line upwards. There's, you know, sometimes you have to go down to go up. So, yeah, it's been quite interesting seeing that sort of play out. And yeah, I spend most of my time on iRacing on the oval side just because I probably enjoy that a bit more. And you know, my passion for NASCAR is quite large, and I've got a lot of friends in America that iRace as well, so I think that sort of plays more into it. But I've started to grow more of a passion for road racing as of late, and I've been doing that more, you know, sort of recently.
Yeah, you're certainly putting in a great showing against Giz and McLaughlin in the E-Series, so we know you've got the talent for it.
And the old bump and run there. Now, tell us about
loved it.
Tell us about the hiatus from the iRacing. Word on the streets is you were a bit of a bad boy and you got slapped on the wrist, or did you just, you know, spit the dummy and run?
Nah, pretty much what happened was is I had my suitcase open and someone packed my bags for me and took me out the front door. So, no, I was competing at a really high level in iRacing, you know, pretty much at the highest level you can get, you know, trying to work my way to the World Championship, and I did back in 2013. And some people that were competing weren't being very legit, and I sort of come across, you know, what was going on. And, you know, you put in time into a game, and to me it wasn't, you know, that important. But, you know, so for some other people it was, you know, they're sort of the closest thing that they can get. So, you know, they would do all sorts of things to, you know, try to get to the next level. So there was a bit of cheating and stuff going on. So a good friend of mine that was working for Chip Ganassi at the time as an aero engineer worked out what was going on, and he competed in one of those world championship events and didn't pit for the whole race. He had a full tank the whole time, and no one noticed. I actually noticed, and I said to him, I said, like, what's going on here? And he explained to me what was going on and who was doing what and all this sort of stuff. So he brought it to iRacing's attention, along with myself, and that ended up getting us into trouble. So it was probably handled a bit wrong at the time from both parties. But you know, I've only recently just come back to iRacing in the last sort of 6 months, and I'm working closely than ever with them, which has been fantastic. And they've got, you know, a lot of new people, you know, sort of in the service as well. So it's been pretty cool to meet them. And yeah, I've just been looking forward to, you know, trying to help make the, you know, the sim a lot more realistic, and, you know, it's fun for me trying to help out as well.
It's funny how the worm turns though, isn't it? That the, you know, that knowledge that you pick up in the back end helps you here.
Yeah, it's been you know, really good, and I think supercars have done a fantastic job. And if you look at other you know, categories of racing that have, you know, tried to attempt you know, what we're doing right now, they haven't been very successful in doing it. You know, either the production's terrible, or you know, the racing's terrible, or you know, the cars are crap, or the race formats are crap. So it's been really good from Supercars' point of view, putting all that together. And I've, you know, obviously been a part of that. And but all the credit goes to them for stepping out of their box and coming in, you know, and approaching me, trying to help out, instead of, you know, thinking that they know all, sort of thing. So kudos to them.
Yeah, the series has looked fantastic, and we were talking about it last week. From like, even from a sim racing person like myself, or anyone else who isn't involved in sim racing at all, it was such a professionally put together show. I think the only one that comes close is probably the IndyCar series in the US at the moment, which Scott's been running in, and Chad's got a run in the other day. But the supercar one's been fantastic, and I think the racing action's been great.
I'll add another one, World Rallycross. They're using their commentators, and it's pretty good as well, which I was surprised at. Brody, I want to ask you about your involvement with this helping supercars, and let's start with the fixed setups. Why'd they go to fixed setups? Why didn't they let drivers change something? Or is there stuff you can change even with the fixed setups?
So the only thing that you can change is the brake bias balance. So that's the only thing at the moment, and probably how it'll stay throughout the series. The only reason why it's ran like this, and you know, no one can touch the setups, is because all the drivers agreed upon running the same setup. And instead of you know, the people that are, you know, currently sim race, like Shane or Scotty or you know, yes, whoever else that's currently on the game, like Chaz has done a bit of sim racing, they could easily go to a competitive team and go get a setup that, you know, could be better than what, you know, something that Rick Kelly could get that's, you know, never done sim racing before. So it was just to make it an even platform, and it's something that, you know, we don't have that in real life at all. We can't just go give our setups out to teams and say, here, plug this in, because, you know, a lot of the IP is all different. So it's just part of, you know, trying a different format and, you know, just trying different things and trying to see how it'll affect the racing. And it's been, you know, pretty good so far.
Love to ask you the question that just about every iRacer wants to know, and that is, how close is the V8 supercar in iRacing as far as handling and dynamics compared to the real thing?
It's very track dependent. Some tracks it's good. Phillip Island's probably the closest track that as it feels to real life, on the game. Obviously there's not that many tracks that we can, you know, can compare to. It's only Phillip Island or Bathurst. On Park doesn't count because Coff cars have never been ran there. So that's, they're a lot different, than how they drive in real life, but it's hard to replicate something that, you know, that can't be replicated in a virtual world. So it's manipulated to drive like a supercar, but it doesn't drive like a supercar.
So they were talking the other day on the telecast that they are still really hard cars to get a handle on, even in sim form. I mean, we know they're hard as a on track because of the spool diff, those sort of things, but they've said that they're hard as well in sim racing.
Yeah, they are. They still drive like a pig. So I can definitely, you know, tell you guys that. So
I blame the guy who did the setup.
Oh yeah, you know, sometimes I blame myself. I'll go into a, you know, server with everyone, go to some laps, and think, God, this thing just drives like an absolute piece of crap. So, but no, it's done well in that way. It's a very hard car to drive, and I think, you know, the supercar in Australia is one of the hardest cars in the world to, you know, extract lap time from. So that's why you see, you know, the top guys in our motorsport go anywhere in the world and, you know, be competitive.
Now this week you're missing out on a run again. You're making way for guys of the name like Ambrose and Joey Logano and a couple of others. I mean, a bit disappointing, but you're going to get your payback.
Oh, I don't think there's, you know, there's nothing to sort of pay back between Scotty and myself. I think, yeah, we'll probably go have a beer sometime and probably butt heads over it. But to be honest, it was a good race, and that's sort of all you can really sort of look at. And, you know, this is just, you know, a form of entertainment to, you know, fill in the time, and, you know, that's what it did. So
when do we see you next again in the supercars?
I'm not too sure, actually. It could be 2 weeks.
You're not racing the next race?
No. I won't be.
Come on. Oh, you're one of the entertainers of that race. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I've been replaced by Ambrose, so.
Let's see. Maybe
you can fill in for Dave Reynolds too.
Oh, I think that got tried, but that's already been disallowed. So,
is it? Oh,
I can figure out how to do it.
Yeah,
just put a webcam on him. Still, he's still driving, but you're.
Oh, that's been spoken about. But
so your setup, could I ask a bit? Because we're going, this episode is a little bit about setup, so we've been talking about that. Could I ask if you give us a quick rundown of your current setup? Because compared to the rigs that some of the other guys we've been seeing in supercars, not everybody
like Rick.
Yeah, no. Some of the guys with the really full-on rigs, yours doesn't look so complicated. So, like, okay, there's hope for us amateurs yet.
Yeah, I think I could do the same lap time on a desk, with a like a Logitech steering wheel than what I could with a $20,000 rig. So that's what a lot of people don't understand is that you don't need a $20,000 rig to go fast. You do need a half decent computer that can run it. Sort of a half decent frame rate and a good monitor, and a Logitech steering wheel pedals can get you pretty far in like a simulator like iRacing. So that's what I used when I first come back to iRacing. When I was in Gold Coast, I was using Paul Morris' son Nash's simulator. That's all he had, and I'd no problems at all winning races with that thing. So I'm currently in Melbourne, and I'm just borrowing a mate's rig, and it's got a direct drive, and it's probably worth 10 grand all up, but it's really no different than sort of a $2,000 or $3,000 rig.
Pedal setup. How much feedback do you get through the pedal setup?
It's very dependent. A lot of the, I'd say probably all the competitive guys don't go for a realistic fuel pedal. They go for a pedal fuel that's going to extract them the most lap time in the game. So they'll like manipulate the stiffness or the softness of the pedal depending on the car and change the rubbers. And there's a lot you can do with brake rubbers on the pedals that I have. So the pedal force will spike and drop down automatically with the way the rubbers and stuff are set up. But at the end of the day, that's like chasing half a tenth. So really probably the biggest thing is just doing laps and trying to get consistent and also, watch the fast guys because, they know how to get around the track.
Can you feel the bumps in the road when you're braking?
No, not through the pedals. All the pedals that I've used don't have pedal feedback, but there is pedals that are now on the market that have pedal feedback.
What do they cost?
I'm not too sure. I think they're made by a company called Fanatec, and they're around probably 600 to 700 Australian, I believe.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but I personally wouldn't use something that gives feedback through my feet. You can't replicate sort of it's not going to help me go any faster having feedback through my pedals. I think a steering wheel that has feedback is probably the furthest that I'd go.
Now, Nick, quickly tell us the rest of the year. I mean, obviously, at some stage we're going back to real racing, as in on the track. What have you got planned for the rest of the season post COVID-19 crisis?
I'll be competing in the Super 2 Championship with Augusta Motorsports. So
you're leading at the moment.
Yeah, yep. So had a really good start to the year with them, and won 2 races in the round at Adelaide, and it's been really good. Sort of jumping into their team. They're just a small family team, and Ben Eggleston, sort of like me, we're a bit sort of mentally unstable, which is sort of good to. Good to be around, and we love to have a good laugh and sort of be a bit funky. So it's been great racing with them, and also to late last year I got announced that I'll be co-driving with Anton DiPasquale in the Enduros with Erebus. So I'm pretty happy about that, and Anton and I both come from Norwell and work closely with Paul Morris, and we're both ambassadors of Norwell. So it's pretty much couldn't ask for a better start to the year so far, and I'm really looking forward to getting into Enduros with Stanley.
Well, thanks, Brady. We could probably talk to you for hours, because I know I'd like to talk to you about the NASCAR stuff you're doing online, because you're doing quite well. But we've pretty much run out of time, so I'm going to wrap it up now, let you get on with what you need to do, which is not much considering the current situation on the planet.
I think he's going to get back to Twitch streaming, aren't you, Brady? I've been watching you quite a bit.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's probably pretty... stranger sometimes, but
very voyeuristic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, Brady. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll have you go on again someday.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
eRacing X has been produced for Motorsport 360, the app, by Big Hair Productions. You've been listening to Andrew Clark, Nathan Huppertz, and Neville Wilkinson. We would also like to thank Brody Kostecki for his time on the phone. The song you're listening to is Electric Cars by Dave Buck. All other production and sound design is by yours truly. You can get eRacing X from most good podcast destinations, including Anchor and iTunes. For extended interviews, stories, and all other extras, you can view and listen at our website, eracingx.com. As always, thanks for listening and take care of yourselves.